Good morning and welcome, everyone. My name is Sherry Hills, and I'm the Acting Manager of Research at the Ontario Media Development Corporation, and it's my pleasure to welcome you all to our first Digital Dialogue Breakfast in the Tri-City region of Waterloo. And thank you to all those who traveled from afar, from Stratford and London, and a lot of communities in southwest Ontario. My thanks also to our board member, Adam Kaplan, who has joined us. Adam, and thank you for coming out and joining us today. Also, many thanks to our promotional partners from the City of Kitchener, the City of Waterloo, the City of Cambridge, and from Communitech, who helped get the word out about the event today. And thanks also to my colleagues, Arianna Moscote-Frere and MJ Bourne and Mark Sonnenberg, who's here from our tax credits area. For those of you who don't know the OMDC, we are an economic development agency of the Government of Ontario. And our mandate is to build Ontario's creative economy, which contributes to over $17 billion to the provincial economy and creates nearly 215,000 jobs. We offer a range of programs and services for the film, TV, interactive digital media, book, magazine, and music industries. We have funding programs, tax credits, and a film commission for screen-based activity in the province. In June of this year, we released our new five-year strategic plan, Lead, Connect, Grow, which lays out our vision, mission, and values and will guide us for the next 5 years. We've created an interactive infographic that summarizes the key points of our plan, and you can find both the plan and the infographic on our website. The Digital Dialogue Breakfast Series brings people together from creative media industries to discuss topics that we think are of interest across the sectors. We're hoping that this morning you'll meet some new people or reconnect with people you haven't seen for a while and get some useful takeaways that will start new ideas percolating. This morning's topic is diversifying audiences and revenue streams through live events. We've seen some great examples recently of companies that have used their books, games, magazines, TV shows, and films as jumping off points for create novel experiences. These experiences allow content creators to get up close and personal with their audiences in non-traditional ways. Our panel today promises to share insights and some of their tips for success. We're pleased to have David McConkey, publisher, Alternatives Journal, here to moderate our panel today. And our industry panelists are Meredith Braun, VP Publishing at Digital Extremes, Pamela Malloy, editor of The New Quarterly, and Craig Thompson, president and executive producer, Balinran Entertainment. Okay, and now over to our moderator, David. David is a longtime publishing and marketing executive. He's the publisher of Alternatives Journal. David was the director of publishing for the National Hockey League, a professor of marketing at Seneca College, the CEO of YourLogoGoesHere.com, and SVP Communications for Game Day Leadership Management Consultancy, among other career positions. Please join me in welcoming David. Thank you.
Anybody who knows me that knows I don't have any trouble in terms of raising my voice. More frequently than not in our office, the headphones go on because my voice carries. Thank you all for being here. It's wonderful to see many friends who I haven't seen in a little while, and I'm really excited to meeting new friends. But before I get started, let me introduce you to the panel and give you a little sense of how fortunate we are to have some wonderful people here helping us to understand how to maximize revenue, unlock new content opportunities through the area of events. So, immediately to my left is Meredith Braun. Meredith, as you heard, is the VP Publishing for Digital Extremes. Now I'm going to read this. So, from the early 80s, when she saw the dashes crossing the playing field of Coleco head-to-head football, that was a favorite of mine, by the way, to having the numb thumb from holding the Atari 2600 controller for too long, another thing, Meredith was hooked on video games. And unlike most of us, she was able to make a career of it. Now, a games industry veteran of over 18 years, Meredith has been integral to Digital Extremes' growth as an independent publisher of video or a independent video game developer. Recently, she ushered Digital Extremes into the world of publishing, building that side of the business from the ground up to launch and support its free-to-play hit, Warframe, along with the recently announced new game, Keystone, and future growth. So let's say hello to Meredith.
Thank you.
Sitting beside Meredith, I'm going to move this puppy up a bit. Sitting beside Meredith is Pamela Malloy. Pamela is the editor of The New Quarterly. Pamela is the editor of New Quarterly and creative director of Wild Writers Literary Festival, which she'll tell you a little bit more about, I'm sure, as we go through to this morning's event. She is also a writer with short fiction published in the UK and Canada. Her debut novel, The Deserters, will be published by Vehicule Press in 2018. She lives in Kitchener, Ontario, with her husband and daughter. Let's welcome Pamela. Craig Thompson is the president and executive producer of Ballinran Entertainment. Craig is a producer, writer, and director who founded Ballinran in 1995 after a 15-year career in journalism. Ballinran specializes in feature documentaries and currently has four films screening worldwide on Netflix, including The Truth in Our Stars, Truth is in the Stars, in which William Shatner explains where humanity will be in the era of Star Trek, 250 years from now. The documentary features Whoopi Goldberg, Neil deGrasse Tyson, the man who degraded Pluto. Well, we'll let him go on that. Mm-hmm. Canadian astronaut Chris Hadfield and Professor Stephen Hawking, plus others including Mike Lazaridis and Neil Turok from the Perimeter Institute in Waterloo. Ballinran has just released another film entitled Game Changers, in which Alex Trebek explores the history and cultural influence of television game shows. So let's welcome Craig. Now, before we get started, let me ask everybody a question, a little exercise, get you moving. Who likes a good party? Who likes, keep your hands up. Who likes planning a good party? Who likes cleaning up after a good party? Who likes paying for a good party? Events are kind of like that. You know, we all think they're wonderful and exciting, and they are. They can really create new opportunities, as you're going to hear. They're going to create new revenue streams that you're going to hear about. But there's a lot of work, and I think the team from OMDC can probably hint to you that putting on traveling roadshows of events, while incredibly rewarding, can also be a little tiring. Am I right, Team OMDC? Yeah. But when done well, great events, particularly when they're strategic, have a potential to revolutionize your organization in many of the same ways as we were talking earlier this morning about digital distribution has revolutionized the music industry, the film industry, the documentary, the games industry. So how do you figure out how to do events in such a way that will be supportive of your organization's core work? How do you do it in such a way that it allows and enhances what you currently do while opening new doors? And how do you do it in such a way where you don't lose your shirt or find yourself totally exhausted? Well, some of that is trial and error, and you're going to hear some lessons from the folks here up on the panel who are going to be able to share with you their insights and their experiences. Now, before I go any further, I remember a couple of years ago there was a wonderful OMDC luncheon event in Toronto, and somebody talked about the idea of content creation in this day and age is really now a 360-degree experience. You know, in the old world of magazine publishing, you had one way of creating your content and one way of distributing your content. And today, some of those are changing, some of those are going away, but in other ways, there are new opportunities opening up. So knowing when to take that leap of faith and try things is one of the things that hopefully you'll be able to get a sense of today. And the other thing I want to just remind everybody is, you know, that concept of walking before you run is also something to keep in mind. And I'm sure you're going to hear about it today. You know, I don't know about you. I love that movie, Field of Dreams. But the idea of build it and they will come is wonderful until you have to report to your corporate accountant. So how do you dip your toe in that water in such a way that you can gain the experience? And you're going to hear some of those things today as we talk about how these organizations have begun to explore how to become more interactive in terms of their audience engagement. And that's fundamentally what this is about. It's about growing your brand. It's about expanding your relationships. It's about building new relationships. And I think when done really well, what it gives you a chance is to open up new opportunities for your organization. So I'm going to shut up pretty soon, and I'm going to ask a few questions of the panelists. Conveniently, see, I'm an old school guy. I got the printed out paper stuff. So let me ask you, panelists, dear panelists, how are you all this morning?
Great.
Should know, Craig's got a little bit of a sore throat, so if he sounds he sounds really raspy. It's like really cool. He sounds like, sounds like a smoky blues singer this morning. So let me ask you a question. Each of your organizations does things differently in terms of how live events fit into your organization. But tell me about how do live events fit into the strategy of your brand or product? And specifically, if those goals and strategies have changed through the years. Meredith.
All right, sure, I'll start. So just to give you a little more background, David did a great job of introducing me, but Digital Extremes has been around for almost 25 years now. It turns 25 next year, 2018. We've been making video games, started on the PC and went to consoles, PlayStation and Xbox, over the years. And in the last 4 to 5 years, we have claimed our true independence by creating a game that kind of never ends. We perpetually update it and kind of sequelize it every few months, essentially. And it's considered a game service as opposed to kind of developing a game like we used to, and it ships off to the stores and you get the box at the store and take it home and you play for a few hours and finish the game and then you're done with that. With that experience. This particular game you download online on your Xbox, PlayStation, or PC, and the game goes on for as long as we continue adding content to it. So to expand beyond just the gaming experience and what we were finding when we first launched this product, it'll be 5 years ago in March, is that gamers today and our audience are looking to expand their experience beyond just the box that they're playing on. They want to interact with the community, like-minded people who also enjoy the game that they're playing, and they want to be able to meet those people in person eventually, it turns out. And so, like David mentioned, walking before you run, we did a lot of things prior to in-person events that kind of groomed this community to be interested in coming to a physical event. So live streaming has become very prominent within the games industry over the last 4 to 5 years, and we have become very proficient in becoming almost partners alongside our players in building this game. So we live stream on a weekly basis up to 4 times a week, showing off the game, interacting with our audience through the computer, taking questions through chat, and then also having our senior development team on camera to be in the hot seat every 2 weeks on a live stream, answering all the hard questions of why aren't these bugs fixed? Why doesn't this work the way I want it to? When are you going to put out this content that we've been waiting for so many months? That kind of thing. And really taking them along for the ride with our development process. And so 2 years ago, We started mulling around the idea of taking it a step further of interaction with our community, and it wasn't necessarily about increasing a revenue stream or starting a new revenue stream for us, but in fact, just further enhancing their experience of our game and the world, the universe that we've built around it. And so we started a con that focuses only on Warframe for the day, and they come to London, Ontario to meet all of our development team and learn how Warframe is made. We sold out the first year. We were a little worried. We were throwing a party that nobody would come to, which is, I think, another one that people worry about when they think about throwing events, because we are in London, Ontario, and the majority of our player base is not in Canada altogether. And amazingly, we had people fly into or get to London somehow from all over the world, Australia, Japan, Europe, South Africa, the UK, tons from the United States, and we sold out the event. We wanted to keep it fairly intimate in the first year. We sold out at 1,500 tickets, and the second year we upped it to 2,500 tickets, and everybody who has been able to participate so far in the event has raved about it being one of the best kind of fan cons they've ever been to because of the kind of love that they see that goes into the event that we put together. So I'll pass that on.
So I think everybody knows in the room knows about video games and documentaries, but probably not a lot of you know what literary magazines are, so I brought a prop. So this is the new quarterly, and this is a literary journal that's been running for 35 years, and we publish emerging and established writers and or national publication. We're the kind of publications that agents and book publishers look to for emerging talent when they're looking to publish new writers. I came to the New Quarterly 6 years ago, and a month into my editorship, we had a consultation on fundraising. Because we wanted to expand our subscription base and look for other streams of revenue. Our consultant said that a festival might be an opportunity here with the population and the conditions. So I went to our local arts fund, and we got funding for the first festival. And we made a decision to make it fairly small. It was when we started, it was Friday night and all day Saturday. We called in our favors of the writers that we published in the magazine, flew them in from across Canada, and we partnered with the Balsillie School. And for those of you who are local, you know it was such a fabulous venue. And that, I think, is one of the key things for us, too, is having a really good venue partner. And they provided us with the space. We kind of went out and looked for a bit of sponsorship, a little bit of donors. Didn't have a lot of experience on that front, but for us, clearly, it was a revenue stream that we were looking for. And that certainly has been one of the outcomes, but the community building aspect has really been a big part of the outcomes for us, and the way that it kind of connects with the magazine has been a really important part of it as well. So six years on, the revenue is growing, in small increments. The festival itself has been a huge success. A lot of the events sell out, and we get people not from South Africa, but from across Canada. They do come. They do travel to see us. The only thing we've changed in terms of programming is we've added a Sunday brunch, so it becomes a really literary weekend. So you can travel here come Friday night through to Sunday and have the whole experience of a literary weekend. So for us, it's been it's been a really great experience, and there's lots of challenges, but in terms of resources, but it's been positive in terms of that, and the strategic decision to go that route was the right one.
Over to you.
The film and television industry is going through some of the major changes that the music industry went through 20 years ago and the games industry in the last 10 years, in that the gatekeepers are redefining themselves. And the challenge as content creators right now is, how are we going to reach our audiences directly? Because it's getting harder and harder to go the traditional route and get the kind of programs that you want to make financed. So you have to go through, have a different strategy to get your programs, your content out to the fans. So when we're looking at new programs, we're looking at, okay, how could we focus on pop culture subjects? How can we find topics that the fans are hungry for, and how do we reach that audience? So we're at this turning point right now where our films are still financed in the traditional model through broadcasters, tax credits, OMDC, et cetera. But we also are very cognizant of the fact that if we're going to stay in business for the next 5 or 10 years or beyond, is how are we going to generate revenue from creating our content? So on The Truth Is in the Stars, our goal in that program, although it was rooted on Star Trek, it's really about how to make science and science fiction entertaining to a larger audience, and what role science fiction plays in influencing science. So we formed a creative partnership with the Perimeter Institute for Theoretical Physics here in Waterloo, which is a gold mine of content. They have the leading researchers from around the world. Stephen Hawking is involved in that center. So we worked with them on creating the film. And then when the film was released, we staged a number of screenings, one which we had at the Perimeter Institute back in June. And there was a panel discussion after the film, where it was streamed worldwide to the various audience members who are on the Perimeter Institute's fan base, I guess you could say. And we weren't able to screen the film on Live Around the World due to rights issues. But perhaps someday we might be able to charge admission. People could actually watch the film and take part in the panel discussion. We're now working with the Perimeter Institute on a couple of other science projects, a series on artificial intelligence. And again, not the pure science, but how to make this science entertaining to a wider audience, and then figure out how to reach an international audience. As David mentioned, we've also just finished a documentary with Alex Trebek on game shows. Now, we know that our audience for game shows is an older audience, largely people who grew up in the 60s, 70s, and maybe the 80s, but mostly people in my generation. So they're not people who are going to be traditionally interested in streaming or Facebook events. So we're actually working with the Museum of Television, the Paley Center in New York City and Beverly Hills, and we're going to have a screening the date hasn't been set yet, a screening in April or May of next year, which we're going to film, and we're going to stream the panel discussion to help promote the film. So in looking at this slide beside me, The thing that I see is more diversifying audiences, and eventually lead to different revenue streams. We haven't figured out what the revenue stream is, but right now is diversifying and reaching the audience, and then the revenue will come later, I think.
That's an interesting point. I mean, I think the room is filled with people who work in the content creation industry, whether it's whichever aspect of it you work on. None of us, I think, in this day and age have unlimited dollars to be able to throw at events and activity. We have to figure out this thing strategically. And then you've heard how, through these three organizations, how they have kind of felt their way through the process. You know, aspirationally, you hope that these events will, produce buckets of cash, but sometimes you have to figure out how these things get done. So, let's in the experiences of the three folks here. I know Craig said that the organization Balinran is still trying to figure out all the aspects of revenue generation. But share with me Meredith, how your organization generates revenue from doing these events.
Sure. Well, I think I mentioned earlier that we're not necessarily trying to make a profit off of these events, but we do need to know that people are going to show up. So we do require, people purchasing tickets so we have an idea of, because the money is going into the event either way. And we think that, a money commitment from our attendees, gives you at least a little more confidence that they're going to show up. I would say never underestimate the level of experience that you can give to your players and what they're interested in or willing to pay for in terms of how VIP that experience could get. We tier our tickets for our fan event. And in order to also not make that feel like it's a money grab on our part, we have made this an opportunity for charitable donation. So in our first year, we actually donated 100% of the ticket proceeds to local charities. And then the people who were buying those tickets felt that they were also participating or their dollars were going to a good cause. One of our top-tier tickets, our VIP tickets, is $250. For that experience, they get a it was a limited number of tickets, only 50 of them available. They sold out within an hour. And for that ticket, they got a brunch in our office space at Digital Extremes, a tour of the space and understanding how our studio works, meet all of the dev team and sit with them and have brunch, as well as early access to the show floor before the day began. And then we had other tiered tickets. $75 was a collector's ticket that came with a collector's only styled T-shirt that we had made. And then standard $25 just entrance fee, one day entrance ticket. To help offset some of these costs and the fact that we were donating all of the ticket proceeds, and something that's big for kind of fan events is merch purchasing. So we designed a large amount of merchandise that we felt our fans would be interested in, and that more than covered, essentially it helped us break even on the whole event. So just knowing that we could do that helped us overall take care of the cost. And this year, because the event went double the size, we did end up making a little bit of revenue towards the end. So, yeah. So next year we're considering whether or not we actually need to move out of London to make it bigger and possibly into Toronto and a little bit more travel accessible to the type of people that come to the event. Yeah.
I should say that we're a charitable organization, Meredith. Oh, so if you're looking for a place to go to for money.
We actually choose a different charity every year.
Well, there you go. I'll leave this with you. So for us, where it really was revenue was one of the key things that we were looking at. We made some strategic decisions early on, and we wanted it to be a good experience for people. I mean, we pride ourselves in the quality of the production and what we do with our magazine. We wanted to have a quality experience. So we went to venues that we felt would be a great place to host the event. The Balsillie was fantastic. So what we tried to do is negotiate low prices or partnership where there's a free venue as much as possible. We didn't have a lot of experience with donor or sponsorship, but we went out and we started talking to people and getting them to donate or give us money for sponsorship on a small level, and that's been steadily growing. We sold tickets, but we also made a decision to keep the tickets low because we wanted to make sure that people came, and also we made a decision to target young people. So we also made a decision to make events free. So we have three strands of programming on the Saturday, and you can go all day for free because of the way we've programmed it. So that then enables us to go to funders like the City of Kitchener, or the City of Waterloo, the Ontario Arts Council, and saying, you know, we are actually giving these free places. So that's a good argument when we get a grant. We do get a grant from the Ontario Arts Council. We have been supported with them from year two. They don't fund first year. So we got the Arts Fund gave us that startup, that critical startup fund, and the OAC has supported us since then. And I said we get this funding from the city. And ticket sales have been good. We sell out. There's always a question about whether we should raise those prices to get more revenue, but we have seen the revenue going steadily in the direction upward direction. But again, it's always that question of trying to keep costs down too. That's the other side of the coin. Also, making sure that we're ensuring that quality experience, not just for the attendees, but we bring 30 authors to this area. And one of the things we do, we make decisions to go to local independent businesses where possible. So we go to local restaurants that give us good food. And that we get that feedback from the authors that they love coming to this festival. And one of the things they say is because you feed us so well. So there's a lot of really real small details that we have to take into account while kind of balancing that revenue and cost factor.
Can I have a bit more water, please? Sure. One of the new areas of business opportunities that are opening up to the film and television sector is through limited cinema release. There are two companies in North America, Cineplex Events in Canada and Fathom Events in the United States. As the cinema industry is facing challenges of filling audiences, especially in the older demographic, they're opening up their cinemas in off-peak times for event-based programming. Anything from competitive gaming to live from the Metropolitan Opera to various fan-based programming. We experimented with this a number of years ago when we did a film called The Captains. We released it in Canada at Cineplex, a number of theaters across the country. But now we haven't figured out a way of we're looking at what kind of film will bring in the audience, both in Canada and the United States, and create a live event around it. So I mentioned the Game Changers project. So the challenge we have with that is to do a live streaming event and beam it to theaters. It costs about $50,000 in production costs, and you have to share 50% of the box office with the Cineplex Events or Fathom Events. So you have to figure out if your ticket sales and sponsorships are going to actually cover the cost of production. So you have to look very carefully before you leap into that world. But it is a world that's available where you can do these live type events with these. And there's a thousand screens available for this kind of thing in the States and a few hundred in Canada. And it's a growing area. We also run a movie theater, an art house movie theater in Stratford, in partnership with Cineplex. And we screened a film back in September, David Gilmour, live from Pompeii. And it was the first one we've done. And it's incredible. We got more than 100 people in Stratford to come and see an event that was filmed live, but not broadcast live. But it just shows that if you pick the right content, and with satellite feeds from the Cineplex companies and events, there's a tremendous opportunity to generate revenue from programming that goes into cinemas.
I can share with you a small little bit of experience from my NHL days. The NHL director of events eventually became Mr. Super Bowl for a while, so he had some experience in. We would talk about publishing events, and he gave me a great piece of advice that I keep in mind. You know, most of us do our initial math, right, when we plan out an event. And he said, okay, first thing you need to do is double your expenses and cut your expected revenues in half, do you still, would it still be profitable? Because we all come into these events with hopes and dreams and aspirations that we're going to sell out, but it's hard to perpetuate these kind of events. I'm not sure that Pamela could have done the Wild Writers Festival year two unless year one would have at least delivered a break-even point. So, you know, as we talk about, walk before you run, manage your expectations too, particularly if there are accountants involved, because their expectations are it's only going to be revenue positive. One of the things that we've talked about here, or hopefully you've heard about, is that live events give you opportunity to develop content. And the question becomes, how do you repurpose your content that you learn at these events in other platforms?
Well, we actually have built in live streaming into our event as well. So our particular event we use as a platform to reveal what is the next big thing that's coming to the game to get our players hyped about. And so we do a live production, live audience, live stream that we broadcast on Twitch TV, on YouTube, and on Facebook Live. And this last year, I believe we had an audience of over 30,000 live viewers. And then that video goes on to our YouTube channel for additional views afterwards. So that's how we've kind of expanded that experience beyond the physical experience. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, for us, it's been a really interesting way of kind of connecting the literary journal to the festival and back again. So a lot of we have panels on different types of subjects, and we're bringing authors in, we're talking to them. Sometimes we actually roll out something we've actually put in the panel in the festival and publish something that comes from that in the magazine. We do a series called Falling in Love with Poetry in the magazine. We have one of our former editor did an anthology of the of that series, and then we had a panel at the festival to launch the anthology, and also to, you know, just sort of just talk about the subject. So it's for us, it's an opportunity for us to meet the authors on face to face, and so that we get a lot of goodwill with that. So we can solicit material from established authors who come to the festival, and then also have an excuse to bring them here to talk to us on the panel. So it kind of goes back and forth.
For us, it's not really about finding new ways of repurposing the content. It's building community and finding out what engages the audience and finding out what we can do next time and other ideas that they can contribute to make them more part of the creative process. I think people are fascinated in storytelling, and they really want to play a role in their favorite movies and television shows. Surprisingly, they want to be able to be involved at the ground floor. And I think you've said that in the gaming industry, the VIPs who want to come in and meet the developers and maybe pitch some ideas. I think that's the same thing. People want to see their lives, their experiences, their interests reflected on the screen. And if you're able to meet them before you make the content, then you've got a loyal audience that's going to generate revenue in the long term.
You've touched on a really interesting point. We talk about audiences, and very frequently our mindset is the audience who pays to attend. But we know as content creators in general that we have a multiplicity of audiences. I think, you know, as you talked about, Pamela, you know, being able to deliver an event that impresses your contributors lowers the barriers when you ask them to do something that they might be slightly uncomfortable with the next time. Or, as you've talked about, Meredith, being able to figure out how to allow your most ardent fans inside the process. Craig, I mean, I'm a huge Star Trek fan, and I loved the documentary The Captains, and I would have paid money to be a grip or a coffee person on that shoot. And think about that from a holistic standpoint. We organizations who are content creation, I mean, hi, Janice. I mean, we've got musicians in this space. Can musicians do VIP events? But we know that we are all being challenged to look in different ways to build our brands, to build our audiences, to build our relationships, and I think that's the key. Authentic relationships that mean something. I mean, who would have believed 20 years ago that comic books would be the most massive cultural influencers? Well, guess what? If you would have gone down to Comic-Con in San Diego, you would have seen the power of that industry. Who would have believed that we could create an event whereby literary authors become superstars? I mean, we know they are superstars, but sometimes, you know, authors live in their own world, and it's wonderful to be able to give them that validation to, or how to revolutionize how we bring our products to market and engage in those relationships. So it's, you know, we've had some interesting points. Now, I'm going to ask for a few tips or key takeaways. Now, please, you can also share some learned experiences, and I'm going to share one with you from the Alternatives Journal perspective. In 2011, Alternatives Journal had a music issue, and our team decided to do a music event in Waterloo. And through that, we created the Grand Porch Party. Some of you in Waterloo probably remember that and experience it. In 2013, we had a night issue, and our editor at the time wanted to create an event. And through that, came Night Shift. I will give you the one caveat that I've learned through those processes, and I had just joined the organization after. We had people doing those events who found out that they loved doing those events more than they liked working for us. So the wonderful thing is the Grand Porch Party continues. The wonderful thing is Night Shift continues. And we had to learn how to say goodbye to it because it was kind of outside of our pure purview. And I think that the team at Alternative Journal today are trying to figure out how we can maybe create events that will have a certain degree of longevity in terms of that. But panelists, please share with me your top tips and maybe a key learning from your experiences so that how you've skinned your knees and maybe saved some of the wonderful folks here from doing some of that too.
On the spot. I guess some of our top tips are you can never plan too far ahead. although it does feel still like even when you get up to the event date that you have forgotten, you know, to do a dozen or more things that are totally critical to making the event success. And so you scramble as well as you can to fix all of those issues. Especially for an event where you know people are coming from far away, sending out those save the dates or making an event around the announcement of the event date is also a big deal. We're already starting to plan for next year's event in July, and primarily because the first year we put it on, we only started planning for it 2 months beforehand.
Wow.
So it's been definitely a learning process for us.
A bit of stress in that.
Yeah.
Way.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And never underestimate, always have backup plans for broken technology. Technology will always screw up right before you get on stage, except for today. Well done, sound guy. technology is a big issue. And crowd control, security, especially in our first year, actually, something that we did not prepare for beforehand is, you know, the world that we live in right now is very volatile with, you know, terrorism and events that take place that luckily haven't hit too close to home in London, Ontario yet, an attack happened just days before in the States at a similar type event. And so we had, guests who had already arrived in London asking what the security was going to be like at the show the next day. So we had to address those kinds of issues. So yeah, you can kind of plan as much as you as for every contingency that you think you need, and they're still going to need more. Yeah.
80% order and 20% chaos?
Totally. Or the other way around.
I feel better now. We started planning our first year festival 6 months in advance, and people were upset. I think I want to talk about expectations. And it's interesting that we're all from very different, each of us are from very different industries, but we're all talking about community as being a really key part of what we're doing. And I think that that's for us. I mean, I was clear that revenue was one of our driving forces for the festival, but the community building has been a really big part of the outcome for us, and that has had really knock-on effects that are kind of hard to measure by accountants or you know, sort of black and white measures. So it is the goodwill that we get with the authors. It's also the goodwill that we get with our subscribers and our potential subscribers. And that's one thing that I didn't mention is another revenue stream, is that because, you know, this is something that doesn't have a big billboard that it advertises it. So our festival is our opportunity to kind of wave the flag for the new quarterly, which means that we do get some subscriptions there. So, you know, we've developed a community with the writers, with the readers, and so when you're thinking about an event, think about what that as being a key part of what the positive outcomes. Keeping it simple is another thing that I think is really important. We developed our formula for our festival Friday night, finished on Saturday night. We added the brunch, and every year people say it's a fabulous festival, and there's a little bit of pressure to expand. And we said, no, we're not expanding. We're going to keep it. That weekend is going to be a literary love-in, and you're going to just wanting to go away, wanting more. And we've just so it's kind of like, because we're all editors during the rest of the year, we're not event planners. We just have this template, and we just plug in all the events during the year, and keeping it simple. Having good venue partners is really, really key. Going to the Balsillie makes everybody feel really, really happy because it's a great venue. It's got great they've got great technology and good sound, and just makes everybody feel like if they're going to be there for the day, they're going to feel good about being there. So, and I think we've got a really good volunteer team, and I think that's also important. That's also part of the community, because they are part of the event as well. They're really excited to be rubbing shoulders with these authors and to be part of the festival as well. So those are my top tips off the top of my head.
My top tip would be to find collaborative partners who can share the risk and benefit from the value that the event creates. So in both of our two recent films, our partners have also been able to help us with promotion. So I mentioned the Perimeter Institute. Didn't cost us anything to hold the event there. They had all of the theatrical equipment and the streaming technology that we could benefit from. And they were involved in the content creation of the film. We filmed there, and we had many people in the film who contributed research. Same with the Game Changers documentary with Alex Trebek. The Paley Center, we interviewed many of their experts, and we filmed there. And they have an outreach program with many, many people in the community who come and learn about the history of television. So by creating an event, their members, their fan base will benefit, but we will as well. So finding collaborative partners to share the risk is my key tip. Excuse me.
Well, thank you, panelists. You've heard some great lessons and heard some great collaborative partners. Walk before you run. Involve your community and your audience. But I'm sure there might be some questions from the rest of you. So this is the time where you get to ask the folks up on the panel some questions. So who has a question or two? Oh, come on. Well, I'm going to ask a question then. How did you get your word? How do you get the word out from your events?
We use all social media channels. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We also have an official forums board that we use. And then we have a PR agency that we work through as well. We put out videos. We live stream about it on a regular basis leading up to the event and what people are going to get to participate in. And yeah, I think that about covers it for us.
Yeah, we use social media a lot, and a lot of our authors become promoters for the event as well. So we're being promoted by their own networks. We have partners in the city and both cities, and they help with the promotion. Our subscriber base is also another key place for us to be promoting the event. Yeah, and it's just sort of traditional kind of putting posters around the city as well.
Excuse me, sorry.
Want some water?
Thanks. Okay, you do have some questions. Sorry. Yeah, so I'm just curious, because you all spoke to building community, how you kind of focus on maintaining that community between your events, right? So especially if you're kind of expanding your audience year after year, how do you maintain those relationships in the in-between?
That's a good question. Because our game is kind of nonstop, 24/7, played around the world, we continually talk to our community on a daily basis. So we have a community team at Digital Extremes that's 7 people big, and they are focused on each particular channel that we reach out to our audience on. Again, I'll mention the live streaming that we do, which helps kind of foster that relationship on a broader level, because it is one person standing on one side of the camera while tons of people watching on the other side. But finding the right people also to interact with that community is totally critical. You need someone who kind of speaks their language. And so our community people are, and I think the philosophy that we have at Digital Extremes is that we're gamers also, and so we know what we like about games, and we hope that what we're putting into our game is what our players like as well. And when they don't like it, they tell us, and we respond accordingly, and we try to be as transparent as we can in bringing them along on the process.
For us, because we have the new quarterly that kind of is our what we're doing for the rest of the year, we're sort of keeping the news of authors out there. So it's kind of an ongoing news feed through our social media. So one of our authors who appeared at the festival 2 years ago won the Journey Prize, which is the top prize in Canada. It's a $10,000 prize for a short story that we published in our magazine. So that's big news for us, but that's big news for her. So we kind of help to sort of celebrate the author's news as well as our own. And you know, we've got our launch of our magazine. So it's that kind of constant communication, I think, is a way of just, you know, kind of at whatever level we can, that we help to keep that community going. So it's just a year-round conversation.
Question.
Yes, my question is about diversifying audiences. Do you only market to like your target audience, like your fans and your subscribers, or are you also trying to outreach to new audiences? And if so, who?
Yeah, it all depends on our content. Obviously, our audience is essentially gamers, and we feel we can appeal to every kind of gamer. And in fact, depending on the content that we put into the game, and actually it was evidence of this just 3 weeks ago, we added such an enormous shift in game content to the game that people hadn't seen before, that we were reaching a whole new segment of gamers that hadn't given Warframe a look before. So prior, the game was kind of what we call a corridor shooter, where you're kind of always, or not always, but in closed off limited spaces, in hallways and caves, and obviously cordoned off arenas outside. And we added an open world aspect to Warframe that has now reached a whole new segment of the gaming audience who wouldn't have otherwise looked at Warframe. So we actually doubled the size of the game with our player numbers in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah. For us, we actually embarked on a diversity project a couple of years through the New Quarterly, looking for specifically new writers from emerging in Indigenous writers, emerging people of color, and this is a whole large program that we put in place, and we also took on consulting editors who help with, we've got an Iraqi editor with us, and we've got Indigenous editor as consulting editors. So we're trying to diversify into very specific audiences, and that's on a real grassroots level where we're actually seeking out writers who are writing from, you know, from those communities.
In order to diversify our content and our community, we bring on experts in advance of making a project. So I'm not an astrophysicist, but our film was about astrophysics. So we had a researcher from the Perimeter Institute working with us, so we didn't sound silly or stupid in reaching out to that audience. On the game show documentary, we also hired the publisher and writer of the Game Show Encyclopedia to reach out to that audience. We don't profess to be experts on the topics that we're choosing, so we bring the people on board who we know will make us sound credible and be able to diversify and reach the audience. Otherwise, if you don't have the knowledge, people will just, you know, make postings, say, how do you know that's incorrect, and you wouldn't have any credibility. So that's what we do with every project. We bring somebody on from that world to help us develop the content.
I'm not sure if this is a question or a comment or an observation. I've been an event producer most of my career. So I'm kind of coming.
Everybody get his card quick.
No. And you know what? I'm trying to try not to be. But I actually have done a little bit of work in media as well. And I think one just observation that I have is that you're coming from the place of promoting an existing product already. So the event itself is not the product. So the revenue piece is a little bit of a nebulous kind of thing where it's maybe a thing, but you're talking about developing audiences, so it's a marketing purpose. So I think it's very important to be clear on why you're doing it. I think at the end of the day, I think with the gaming guys, you kind of got a product extension in itself, which is interesting, and could be a whole revenue stream. Sure, the extent of it, but it's really still mm-hmm. marketing and developing your core product.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I was producing,
totally true.
If I was producing Phantom of the Opera, that's a product unto itself. I got to sell tickets, and I got to fill the seats. Mm-hmm. And if I don't, I close. Mm-hmm. And then I can make a book or a movie about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So. Well, actually, one of the revenue streams that I forgot to mention that we added this year was a digital ticket. So we made in-game content that kind of highlighted the event and gave everybody kind of commemorative in-game items to remember the event. And so those who couldn't attend in person purchased the in-game content as well. So that was a pretty impressive sales tool this year. And then just to add to that regarding, the areas that you don't really realize, and I think Pamela mentioned this as well, that are much harder to measure are the kind of periphery effects that an event has. So the kind of morale boost that our development team got from meeting all of the fans who play the game in person and hearing their stories and interactions and how this game has affected their lives and the people that they have made friends with. We've had a wedding in our game because we had a couple meet through the game. And so those kinds of inspiring human stories really, drive our development team to keep, focus on making this game the best it can be, and so therefore the revenue ends up coming down the line much longer after the event's over.
I just forgot we had a wedding engagement at one of our events.
Oh. We did too on stage. We did too on stage. Yeah. Somebody proposed
it was
this year.
It was in the falling in love with poetry.
Right. Oh, right.
Of course.
That's awesome.
Question?
Yeah.
So, David, at the beginning, you spoke about Field of Dreams, and if you build it, they will come. I'm curious, and I think John touched on this, just
beautiful. Okay. Okay. And John just talked about it a little bit in terms of what you're doing in terms of the events. It's more of the marketing side of things. How do you approach your audience or determine your audience for the original product that you then market with these different events? Perhaps you can touch on that because you don't want to build it and then they will come. And mm-hmm. in particular with Digital Extremes and the last portion that you brought on board to double up your user base, mm-hmm. did you have an inclination beforehand? And how did you go about determining how successful or whether or not it would be successful?
Right. Well, yeah, we certainly keep an eye on what's trending in gaming. And I would say that we necessarily make that guide our development decisions, but our team stays so in touch with our community and where they're going that we, go with them, I guess, sometimes. Before we started making Warframe, we certainly knew the audience that we were going after. We knew the type of game that we were making. It was a third-person co-op action game. Our history is in action games, and so our gamer is, and this may come as a surprise to many of you, is average age of 32 and male, which is probably not a surprise, but many are always surprised that the average age of our gamers is much older than they expect, and who are action fans and had an array of competitive landscape games that we knew they were probably already playing, and some that had been announced that hadn't come out yet that we needed to keep an eye on for competition. And we continue to do that, especially with this game, because it goes on and on and on as long as people keep coming back. So our bread and butter is making sure people come back.
For us, the magazine is really our core product, and I think that we're very clear that the festival has to serve the magazine. And we also have just partnered with a luxury lodge up north, and we're going to be running a writing retreat. And that is also, it has to serve our main purpose, which is the magazine. So I'm an editor, not an events planner, so that will always be our core.
I just think creating value-added content to get people engaged in your community and give them material that they're not going to get as a regular customer, so building loyalty through value-added content.
Yeah, I mean, in many ways, it's marketing 101, which is sell your customers the product that they want to buy. I mean, in the world of publishing, the idea was traditionally it was a print publication. Today it may be a digital experience, perhaps it's an event experience. And then there's also I just wanted to very quickly talk about, or very quickly mention in regards to what Janice's question, I think there's in many cases also obligations to get outside of your comfort zone, to reach out to new audiences, not only for the business benefits, but for the societal benefits. So, I remember saying at an OMDC event, if you're doing something for the first time and it doesn't feel uncomfortable, then you're probably not doing it right. And I think that also applies to how you think about doing events and how they plug into your work. And you're going to learn, and you're going to stub your toe, and you're going to get back up, and you're going to try it again. And I think that's the way that you need to do it. But also be brave and be creative in terms of how you figure out your different kinds of partnerships. And I think that's one of the key takeaways. Unfortunately, we can't spend all day here because the good folks from the Ontario Media Development Corporation, they've put in a lot of time, energy, and effort to put this together. So I would like to, my first things as I wrap up, is just to take a moment to thank the Ontario Media Development Corporation for their great work in not only in putting on this event, but empowering creative content developers across the gamut. I mean, for those of you who have not experienced OMDC, I mean, I think it's pretty fair to say that for many of us, we would be extremely challenged to do new things and explore new opportunities. So first and foremost, to OMDC. Secondly, I would like to thank our panelists. There will be opportunities when we finish the official portion here if you want to have independent conversations. As you've heard, everything that's come, what I've taken away is that there is, be prepared for unconventional collaborative partnerships. So I'm hopeful that a year from now there's going to be some incredible events and activities that will come out of today's. So let's, I want to thank Meredith Braun. I want to thank Pamela Malloy. And I want to thank Craig Thompson for being here and sharing with you their hopes, dreams, aspirations, and lessons learned. So, to the panelists. And finally, the most important community to thank is everybody sitting on the other side of this microphone. Thank you for being here today. You know, when I woke up this morning, I looked out the window, I went, oy. It's going to be one of those days, and to know that this room is full, that it is filled with exciting ideas, some of which are already coming to fruition and some of which are just being germinated. So you're all courageous, and I thank you for being here today. So this is for you. Have a wonderful day.